Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Ryan Dobson, along with our physician in residence, Dr. Meg Meeker. And Meg, today's program is an important program for anyone who's engaged, thinking about getting engaged, or who has been recently married.
A lot of people spend thousands of dollars and hundreds of hours planning a wedding. I know I spend a lot of time, but most couples don't spend adequate time preparing for their first year of marriage. And I remember that the first year I married Walt, it was a rough go. So rough, in fact, that when our son-in-law came and asked permission to marry our daughter, one of the first things I said was, absolutely, but I really want you to get some premarital counseling, because that first year can be very tough.
Well, it is. And I know for Laura and I, we got married very quickly, that we didn't have a lot of time to prepare for that first year of marriage. But we did go through some great premarital counseling and then stuck with a counselor throughout that first year. We actually almost wrote a book about it, but we decided, you know, it was very intimate and it was very personal. First years of marriage can be very difficult.
Very hard. Well, in today's program, we're going to hear from two people that have been on our program several times. Robert and Bobby Wolgemuth have written over 20 books, and today's show is a conversation they had with your dad about their book, The Most Important Year in a Man's Life, or The Most Important Year in a Woman's Life.
So here now on this Family Talk broadcast is Robert and Bobby Wolgemuth.
Okay, this is from the NIV, Deuteronomy 24:5. If a man is recently married, he must not be sent to war or have any other duty laid on him. For 1 year, he is free to stay at home and bring happiness to the wife he's married. What a great concept.
Isn't that a great concept?
I wish it had been applied when Shirley and I got married.
That's right. Well, we went to the publisher and said, from that verse, we think a book needs to be written, The Most Important Year in a Man's Life. And so we went back and forth. They said, no, it can't be just for the man. It needs to be for the couple. And we said, we want to write a book straight for a man. I mean, if you read this book, you know that two men have been very candid with this groom who's reading this book. I mean, we hold nothing back. The publisher said, okay, then have your wives write the same book for women. And so they put the two books together, and like a Spiegel catalog, women in the audience would know what that is. The book has two fronts. One side says the most important year in a man's life, what every groom needs to know, and you flip it over, and it says the most important year in a woman's life, what every bride needs to know.
And when after both Missy and Julie were married, they said to us, what we learned in that premarital counseling was so incredible, it really did prepare us for marriage. So we were anxious to give the woman's side, too.
Bobby, you say in your portion of this book, which is about half,
it's about half and half.
You say that it is ironic and probably unfortunate that young women who are engaged often spend up to 500 hours planning the wedding and almost no time figuring out how to make a marriage.
That's right. Most brides spend 10 times more time on the event, and the most elegant wedding in the world would become a useless ornament if the couple is not truly prepared for what they're going to face. And the event is nice and it's memorable, but it has really no impact on what's ahead. And our point in this book is we want to get you excited about what's ahead and prepare you for this exciting time.
And you're referring indirectly to the lack of premarital counseling or the inadequate premarital counseling.
Most couples have about 5 hours of premarital counseling. That's average. And most couples read a book, which is 10 hours. So you put that against what you are preparing for a lifetime, and it just falls short.
Well, and here's something else. All of us around the table are married. We know that something happens in that ceremony that changes stuff. Mm-hmm. For example, a man, more typically than not, a man will check emotionally off his to-do list, get married. And then after the honeymoon, he gets back to his to-do list, you know, increase my salary, move up in the corporate ladder, get a better car, whatever. He's checked something off. He's finished something at the ceremony. She started something at the ceremony. So those two things all by themselves say that ceremony changes things. You can get a lot of premarital counseling done, but the things we talk about in this book, some of them don't appear until after you're actually married.
Why is the first year of marriage more important than all those yet to come?
Because it's just like a good investment. Let's say that I had come to you 20 years ago and said, there's this idea called the internet. You can't comprehend what it will be, but there's a company called Yahoo. And trust me, put $1,000 in this company, and 20 years from now, you're going to be in great shape. Well, what would $1,000 buy today in Yahoo stock versus what it would have bought 20 years ago in stock? Well, the minimal amount of investment that you make in this first year, and what we're talking about in this book is not rocket science. It's all very doable. We make the chapter short and easy to understand with lots of stories and examples. This minor investment, this minimal investment, will pay huge dividends down the road.
Another way to describe that is the foundation. If you're going to build a house, you had better have the foundation done right. If you make a mistake there, the whole thing's going to lean.
Right, yes. And if 10 years from now you decide that you want to redo your house, the cost of fixing the foundation after you've built your house is very high.
That's right.
Bobby, why can't two people who are starry-eyed over one another and have just wanted to be together every moment, every waking moment of their lives prior to the marriage, why can't they just enjoy that first year of playing house together and just begin building a life? Why is it often so difficult?
I think the habits that we bring to the first year of marriage have so much to do with what we're building here. And really, we are building a foundation. We say it's for a marriage, but it's really for our whole family. This is starting the next generation. We are building an incredible foundation for family. The habits, the way we talk to one another, the looks on our faces, if we look askance at each other, if we fight unfairly, all these things bring to bear what kind of foundation we're going to have. And you build a habit and you reap a lifestyle. And this marriage can be fabulous. It can be so exceptional if we get the right habits the first year.
I'm sure you know how few couples understand what you just said.
Yes.
And realize that it's not going to be as easy as it looks.
Yes. And some things don't appear until after you're married. One of them, we talk about this in chapter 4, is the family of origin. Because you haven't lived together, you haven't experienced how each other treats certain situations. Those things show up only after you're married. And it can be as easy to fix as the right kind of toothpaste. It can be as challenging as what you do with a holiday. You know, my family, we always opened our presents on Christmas Eve. Her family, they always opened them on Christmas morning. Well, what are you going to do? That was a normal, in fact, in the book, we have a list of 50 possible normals. That is, things that you bring to your family, to this new marriage. Things as silly as no house is complete without a cat. Or the dad always does the financial books.
Or dogs are better than cats.
Dogs are better than cats. Now, here's the danger of family of origin stuff. Because it's all I knew as a kid growing up in a home. I think it's right. See, I put a quality on it so that if Bobby's idea of those things is different than mine, then she's what? She's wrong. I'm right. So many of those first year conflicts have to do with what I'm accustomed to, my normals, in conflict with Bobby's normals.
Well, what are some of the potholes? They're almost inevitable. I mean, we all hit those holes in the road, as we go along. What are the common ones?
One of the things we say right from the beginning for a woman is you have to be your husband's coach. You have to tell him what is on your mind, how you're thinking, what is important to you, what your needs are. And I think in the family of origin part, we have to say, you know, in my family, we did it this way. Let's sit down and let's just talk about this. Even to the point of maybe addressing my parents or my husband addressing his parents and even hurting their feelings if we don't come there for Thanksgiving dinner or we don't come for Christmas dinner, to say, what is it that we as a couple are establishing as our new home? These are things that you don't know you're going to get into. But so boy, did they come.
In-law conflict is one of the potholes.
And that's we have
well,
a
that's,
yeah.
That's a big.
And that's
I mean,
a different
that can
chapter.
Wash the whole road
right.
out.
Right.
That's a different chapter.
We took a whole chapter for in-laws because it is such a huge thing. We call it what lies beneath the surface. You don't even know that this could be a possible conflict, but it often is.
The first sentence of that chapter is, "I am an in-law. I'm writing this, and I'm writing this to a man who's a groom, newly married, and he doesn't understand the impact of what it means to walk my daughter down the aisle and give her away." And the way I describe this in the book is I talk about the first time I kissed her when I first saw her when she was 30 seconds old. Mm-hmm. And now she's on my arm and I'm walking down. I'm not going to make it through this. I'm mm-hmm. walking down the aisle and the music is filling this church and all these people are standing there and I'm numb from head to foot. And I have this tremendous sense of dread. This mm-hmm. is not a celebration. This is a funeral. Mm-hmm. This is the mm-hmm. end of something very precious to me. Mm-hmm. And it needs to be that way. This, mm-hmm. in that way, it is a celebration because it's the way it's supposed to be. And I love John and Christopher. I couldn't have asked for more. But this is the end of a certain kind of relationship that I've had with this girl. I am no longer the big kahuna. I am no longer the go-to guy. Mm-hmm. And even now, I need to say, honey, you probably shouldn't be telling me this. Tell John, tell Christopher. I need to defer that back to those new, most important men. That's a big deal. However, I need to be sure that my children know that their relationship with each other now is more important than their relationship with me. That's a very difficult thing as an in-law. I've got 25 years of experience, and he's got 2 weeks. He's a dog. Who does he think he is? But it's right. And so we actually give stories, true stories, about situations where a man, a groom, got on the telephone and said to his father, "I don't want you to speak to my wife like that anymore." Mm-hmm. And this is a true story where a father-in-law had called his daughter-in-law and gave her a hard time for missing his wife's birthday. Mm-hmm. And when the groom found out about this, he got on the phone with his dad and said, "You will never speak to my wife like that again." Well, what he was saying to his wife in his presence is, "This relationship now is the most important relationship in my life." That's a very tough thing for in-laws to face, but it's the right thing.
You know, Shirley and I went together for 3.5 years before we got married. I was trying to get a master's degree, and she was finishing up in college, and we postponed everything until it was absolutely right. Loved each other like crazy, and got married and hit this pothole of in-law conflict, not on my part with her mother, but with my parents. I was an only child, you know, and I was central to my mother especially, but my mother and my dad and the way they felt about me, and that all had to change. And there was tension between them. They didn't even know each other very well. You know, they both loved me, my parents and Shirley, but they hadn't learned to love each other yet. It tore me up because I couldn't make them suddenly know each
right,
other.
Right.
I couldn't bring them into the kind of relationship I had. And I had to relax and let it happen, and it did. But that first year, that was one of the potholes.
Well, you know? Genesis 3 says, Jim leaves his mother and father and cleaves to his wife, and the two shall be one.
About 1,000 miles away would have worked.
And what that means is it's up to you as the groom to say to your mom,
"Yeah,
I love Shirley. This is my primary relationship." As painful as that is for you or her, if you don't do that, then what you're doing is you're setting up your mother and your wife to be in conflict for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
Because you haven't done that.
Well, I try to do that. But, you know, there was a conflict of interest there between the two parties.
And our kids gave us a lot of help on the in-law part. And for a man, it's different. What you just described is typical for a man and his mother, because all of a sudden she has a new woman that is in charge of her son. And from the time he was a baby, she chose his clothes, she helped him find his college, and now this other woman has taken that. For a woman, it takes a little bit of a different turn, because often a girl talks a lot to her family. She talks to her sisters. She's best friends sometimes with her mom. They plan the wedding together, for goodness sake. If they're spending every single day, and we had one bride that told us she called her mother 4 times a day, and her husband just sort of let it go. And she came in saying, "I'm having problems. My husband doesn't communicate with me." And when questioned about how many times she talked to her mom, the suggestion was made by Susan in this case, why don't you just keep a journal and just talk to your mom 4 times a week? Well, what this girl wrote in her journal, she said, at first I was angry about this. By the time I was into it 3 months, I realized that I was lonely, and I went to my husband. I said, can we go for a walk after dinner and just walk around the block and hold hands and talk? I really want to talk to you. And she said, I found myself forcing myself to talk to my husband because I was needing someone to communicate with. And the big aha for us as we were talking to our children about in-laws was, if we really want to help our kids, we are going to encourage them to be best friends with their spouse. And even though I might not understand this as an in-law, my daughter's job is to go to her husband and say, honey, you are my go-to guy. I want to talk to you. And the friendship begins to build. And that's the ideal.
Yeah.
Okay, let's say, and this is a perfect story following what Bobby just said. So this bride comes to her groom and says, I'm not talking to my mother as much as I used to, and I need to talk to you. And he says, okay, what do you want to talk about? And she says, what? That isn't what I had in mind. Here's why. Most men have destination conversations. I pick up the phone. I want to make a haircut appointment. That takes me 20 seconds. 3:30 Wednesday, terrific, thanks, bye, done. Or I call a client, or I call a customer. And even though we may shoot the breeze, we both know this is a destination conversation. My wife, many times, wants to have a destination-less conversation. So she wants to engage me in conversation, and it may not come to a conclusion. It's just she wants to hear my voice. She wants, in fact, talk about the three different kinds of things when,
well,
when
again,
I come to you
as,
with a
as
question.
As a coach, because I am setting myself up as a coach in this marriage, I want my husband to know right away, I want to make it clear that I want you to advise me or help me make a decision or just listen. And often it's the just listen where I need to say up front, honey, I'm really not asking you for an answer right now, but I need to tell you that what happened today. I had this conflict with my girlfriend, and you won't believe what happened. Now, before I get into it, I need you to just listen and not advise me because I'm not asking
you. Or if she doesn't say that, I may say, now, is this a conversation where you want an answer?
And a woman does have a need to talk, and she wants to know you're her friend. I think women are really responsible many times for miscommunication because we think, oh, he should just be able to figure me out. No, he can't figure you out. You are a unique person. And in this, today, I might feel differently than I do tomorrow. I might want him to decide tomorrow. But today, I just want him to maybe advise me, listen. So
it's unfortunate how many times the wife has these needs and these desires that she doesn't articulate and doesn't coach him and then gets very angry at him for not being able to figure that out, as you said, not know it intuitively.
This is not a beat up the husband book, because we're laying as much responsibility on the wife to do exactly what you've just said. He gets the blame sometimes, but she hasn't been a good coach. She hasn't said, I need for this to be a conversation where you just listen to me, or I need an answer to this question. So listen to me carefully, then I'm going to have an answer. So without a coach, how can you expect the player to do very well? So she becomes his coach. So we don't beat the guy up here. This is really a shared thing.
Yeah, it really is. That's why I like it. I mean, half the book goes to one side and half to the other. What about the power games of the first year? That really sets the stage for the rest of the marriage. If you have one person totally dominant and the other is so passive that they can't really hold their own. Now, I believe in masculine leadership, Robert. You talked about that here. And I believe in the biblical understanding, the biblical teaching of male leadership. I believe in that. But I also believe there is a give and take in the relationship. And if the power is not handled right, there's resentment and conflict.
There is. Here's what we say to the man in the roles. You are a leader. You are a warrior. You are a lover. And we define what that is. Now, those three areas a man uses as a power base sometimes with his wife. In the leader role, I talk about owning 51% of this business. I owned a business. I owned 51% of my business. I decided at that moment, and I read about this in the book, I decided at that moment my primary job was to do everything I could with my 51% to ensure his success. Well, it's the same thing in my role as a 51% owner of this marriage. My primary responsibility is to do whatever I can to ensure my wife's success. Hmm. A warrior, what does that mean? Well, what that means is when I am in a conflict with my wife, my job first is to defend her emotionally. Especially because you've got this relationship now where you're ultimately vulnerable to each other. So you know exactly how to get right in there, because in moments of tenderness or intimacy, you've confessed certain things about yourself to your spouse. You can never use those in battle. You can't refer to physical characteristics in the middle of a, because there's nothing you can do about that. In the middle of a battle, Bobby can't say, well, take your big fat German knobby nose out of my business. Well, that's something I can't do anything about.
That had a ring of familiarity to it.
That might sound like one.
But see, she's lost some battles because she used that. So anyway, as a warrior, you protect your wife. And then as a lover, your job is to pour affection onto your wife, verbally, physically, tenderly. Being there for her when she wants to talk in a destination-less conversation. And it actually, even though this is the most important year in a man's life and in a woman's life on the first year of marriage, we really decided that this really needs to be a book for the next year of your marriage as you commit yourself to new things and wonderful things in your relationship.
Well, this is a destination conversation that we're involved in here, and we've just reached it. And I said when we were off the air that it's a bit of a frustrating topic because it's infinite. It goes in so many different directions, and you can never feel that you have covered it because you can only wave your hand at many, many things. And we're going to have to wave our hand at it next time because our time is gone. For this program, it's two books in one. On the front side, where the cover usually is the most important year of a man's life, what every groom needs to know. You flip it over and turn it top to bottom, and it's the most important year in a woman's life, what every bride needs to know. And half the book is given to the first topic and half to the second. And there is so much in here, again, because marriage is pretty infinite in itself. You're dealing with two eternal souls that are trying to come together and make something workable here. And it is it's not an easy task, but it is worth the effort.
Yes, it is.
We are out of time, but at least would you take 20 seconds to say that living together before marriage looks to some people like a good way to work these problems out, but that doesn't work. First of all, it's immoral, and secondly,
it doesn't work.
The statistics are against you. Almost twice as many divorces with couples who have cohabitated than couples who haven't. So if you're a statistician, if you're a person, a man or a woman, who says, I want to play the odds in my favor, cohabitating takes your chances down 50%.
There's a reason why that's not what
sure
God
is.
Had in mind here. It's a good book, much content. Let's pick it up next time.
Great.
Thank
Great,
you, Robert
thanks.
And Bobby.
You've been listening to part one of a program titled The First Year of Marriage here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, along with our physician in residence, Dr. Meg Meeker. And Dr. Meeker, today's program was a very important one for couples who are preparing to tie the knot. So much attention has been given to preparing for the wedding day,
right,
but not enough attention is given to the weeks and months that follow.
You're absolutely right, Ryan. Couples have to take the time to prepare for the marriage. If they don't lay a solid foundation to begin their new life together, they're setting themselves up for failure, and I see this all the time. But I'd like to take it a step further. Obviously, not every couple who neglects to go through premarital counseling or lay that foundation is going to fail. There are many couples that spend all their energy planning their big day, but they don't spend any time preparing for what comes after that day, and yet they still seem to figure it out. But figuring it out isn't a good goal to shoot for.
Yeah.
The goal is to have a marriage that's strong and that thrives. And the best way to set yourself up for a marriage that is strong is to spend some time laying a solid foundation before you tie the knot.
Yeah, that's a great point. And maybe those listening to today's broadcast, maybe some of you realize that you need some help finding someone to talk to about this. Maybe you're getting ready to marry someone, or maybe you're in the first year of marriage, and you feel like it would be healthy to meet with a counselor. I would totally agree with you. My wife and I do that at least once a year. We go through marriage counseling or go through a conference, but we would love to help you do that. Pick up the phone and call us at 877-732-6825 or visit drjamesdobson.org, and we'd be glad to connect you with a counselor in your area.
Or maybe you'd like a copy of the Walgamuth's book that we mentioned earlier. It's called The Most Important Year in a Man's Life, or The Most Important Year in a Woman's Life. You can get this by visiting our website, drjamesdobson.org, or by calling us at 877-732-6825.
And be sure to join us again next time when we'll hear the conclusion of The First Year of Marriage right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.